Blog Talk Radio.
And good afternoon, good evening, good morning. Byron, does it sound like I'm very confused?
No, you're never confused. You're just giving it, you're covering all the bases.
I'm covering all the bases. That's
right, because remember, we're internet radio, so we're around the world.
Yeah, so we could be on at 2 o'clock in the morning and, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning. As a matter of fact, when I was talking to Congressman Donald Payne, you know, when he was in office, and of course, before he passed, you know, he would be calling from the different places, so it was very exciting.
So it's apropos.
Yeah, it is apropos. Well, this is GoPro Radio Network, and we are on the internet, and we are the news, information, education, and global communications internet station of the nation. We do, everyone, true news, and this is the Kay and Gus Show. Now, of course, my partner, Gus, as many of you may know by now, has, you know, he's one of the angels.
That's
and
right.
He had a long, long illness. And he had passed away a couple weeks ago. And anyway, he's here in spirit.
Amen.
He's here in spirit.
I
and,
like that.
Yeah, and the name is going to remain Kay and Gus. I'm not ready to change the name yet. And when I get ready, that's when I'll do it.
Amen.
So, and he's here in spirit. And I know he's laughing, saying, here she goes again, or something like that. Something like that.
Well, there's nothing wrong with laughter in the spirit.
I know, because he was very funny. And, you know, when Ayana... And, you know, a few other people. Who else was that on with us that day, Ayana? Lisa was here and Bob Martin. And we were all telling, you know, some amusing stories about him because Gus had quite a sense of humor.
Yeah.
And he was big fun. But I'm really very tickled. Oh, I have to say hello to Andrew. You know, this is somebody that, a nice young man who put our cable together during the storm.
Okay.
And, you know, we didn't have, you know, any lights, any heat, any, you know, anything. And, you know, cable was off. And of course, we had to go over to one of my daughter's houses and, you know, see the election of Obama.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That was so exciting. That was really, really so exciting.
You know what's really amazing? There were more African Americans who voted this year than
the year
did
before
2008.
Yeah, you don't play with us.
That's right. Don't mess with us.
No, that's the whole thing. I am telling you. And what a good feeling to have him in again. And I know there are some of us, you know, who really don't agree with that.
Right.
But you know, one thing, when you have to think about the alternative, you always really have to be realistic about what's happening right now, right here.
Yes.
You know, and you know, I like President Obama.
Yes.
He is the president of all the people.
Yeah.
Accept it, period. Okay? The alternative, what would have been who? Whom? Romney? You got to be kidding me. You know, he is still, you know, he's still stunned by the fact that he lost. Not only did he lose and lose a whole, you know, billions of dollars, but he lost to a black man. Okay?
History will speak of that.
I tell you. And I'll tell you another thing. You know, a friend of mine, you know, Glenda Taylor wrote this book, which I always refer to, Jalen Musso's Drum. Glenda is quite a writer and a good friend of mine. And I was reading, you know, Jalen Musso is a griot.
Okay.
And she talks about female entertainers who are really historians.
Yes.
And she talks about Lena Horne, and I was just happened to return to this page. And it says here, you know, this is about Lena Horne going to perform somewhere. And let me see if I can find this page because it's really, really very important. And she was angry because of the fact that they wanted her to perform before, you know, the military. And it was Kennedy at the time who had invited her to this event.
Yeah.
And I can't look at this page right now. But anyway, and it says that during this conversation that they're talking, this was the line that was in it. Kennedy said, well, she was complaining about, you know, the black soldiers not, you know, sitting behind white German soldiers, and she had to perform before them.
Yes.
And okay, we're going to be taking a short break, and we're going to be welcoming Wayne Gilman here, you know, former news director of LRB. But I'll finish this story about Lena Horne when we come back. It's dynamite.
I can't wait.
And you're going to sit right there.
I'm not going.
Don't you move.
I won't.
We'll be back. But he's just...
Hey,
are back. We are back. Kay Thompson here for the Kay and Gus Show. When we just we're graced by this appearance of one Wayne Gilman, the former news director of public affairs, expert on WIBBLS.
Yes, many moons ago.
So why are you late? You don't like the money we're paying you?
You know, someone had asked me on my way over here if I do get paid by it. So, Kay's a very wealthy person.
Yeah,
it's just the fact that I can be in her presence.
Is enough? Is enough pay?
Well, yeah, satisfactory. Price
there you go.
So Byron, he's not a good paid today.
No, he's a good company.
I've been with her for a long time. We never got paid. Yeah. I've proposed certain things that, we won't even get into.
Yeah, like, watch yourself. I'm writing a book.
Yes, that's true.
Okay. Now, I was telling Byron the story about Lena Horne in Glenda Taylor. You remember Glenda Taylor.
Yeah.
A good friend of mine. And I worked for her with Olympic Vision at one particular time when I was working in Harlem for her. She is a writer extraordinaire.
Mm.
Okay. And she was telling about the griots. And the name of this is the Jalamuso's Drum. And it talks about black female entertainers who, were really historians, because whenever they would perform overseas, they would talk about that area and the things that they were going through. So really, they were cultural historians.
Right.
And Lena Horne was performing before white troops at one time under the Kennedy administration.
Ooh.
And Kennedy had told her, she was angry that she had to perform before white German soldiers while the black soldiers were sitting in the last seat. So she went and sang to them and then, left. Because she was angry. But anyway, she was saying that Kennedy said to her, and I just happened to turn to that page, President Kennedy said, "Don't worry, in 30 years there'll be a black president."
Mm.
Isn't that something? And I was trying to get to Glenda, before to find out exactly what year was it that she said that.
I was just going to say, I guess somewhere in the early
60s. I don't know.
I don't know
if she wrote that then, or not. But anyway.
And I tell you, I sweated through this election this past.
I know you did. By the way, Eric is calling in, so he says you have a caller. So we're going to go to that call right now, Byron and Wayne Gilman.
Sure.
Wayne Gilman is here, and Byron, my good friend, is here. Mm-mm-mm. It's some fine ones. Anyway, hello. You're on the air.
Wilfredo Benitez.
Wilfredo Benitez is on, and Eric Payne is going to be on, too. How are you, Wilfredo Benitez, attorney?
Fantastic. I am so happy to be on this show. Gee whiz, I couldn't wait to call in.
Where have you been? Here you started with us, we were down at New Jersey Performing Arts Center, and then you left us.
Well, I didn't mean to leave you guys. Unfortunately, I do have to work and run my law practice, but really, I'm just happy to be a part of the show tonight, and I thank you for taking my phone call.
By the way, Ayanna said hi. She said he sounds so far away. Tell him Ayanna said hi.
I said hi, too. I apologize for the long distance sound.
That's okay. Wayne Gilman, you were on the show. It's packed with Wayne.
A long time ago.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Just fine.
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in here, now that I just arrived recently, I should say.
He looks gorgeous.
A couple of minutes ago.
Yeah, he looks gorgeous.
He looks good. That's great.
Yeah.
Great.
Right.
That's
He's
excellent.
Excellent. He's going to run for president.
Yeah,
I support him.
Let me.
Hey, listen. After Obama's done, I'm open.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, we have to keep the movement going. I mean, there's already talk of secession now. Can you imagine that?
Which is ridiculous. Actually, you're right. I saw a show on NBC where they talked about Texas possibly thinking about seceding. It's absurd, and it reeks of the obvious, and it's too bad that we have a great President Obama who's done all the right things, and like Clinton said during the convention speech, no president, no one, including himself, Reagan, whomever, would have done in 4 years what was expected of him. I mean, it's just really ridiculous, and it's unfortunate that we are not, we're not embracing this guy who's doing a fantastic job. So, it's too bad that we have states like Texas talking about seceding. It's not going to work, and I think most of them will come to their senses.
I just think that they want to make a statement, same way Fox was in denial the night of the contest, certainly with the under the guidance of Karl Rove and many others in the party.
Karl who?
Rove.
Karl
who? The idiot. I'm just taken back at how blatant it is. And it just goes to show that we haven't changed, as a country. We still have sport.
Absolutely not. It's to the core, and to the core, and to the core. It's unfortunate you guys, you know, even after Obama won, the talk that he didn't win with a mandate is ridiculous. And then you have someone like Karl Rove, who's now is on the offensive, because obviously he spent $100 million, I'm assuming good money, on the race where the commercials had no impact on the race. They missed the mark on all the relevant issues. I mean, it's just too bad. And, you know, the majority of the people spoke. They gave Obama a mandate, and I believe it's clear as to what he needs to do going forward. And it's too bad you have people like Karl Rove undermining him to today. And you're right. You know, the fact that we have this discourse, it really just denotes it.
It's old hat, so he might as well give it up. And the man is in for, what, 4 years, so you don't like it tough.
I think as history reveals itself, one of the things that we have to get to the bottom of is indeed the plot to take over the government.
Oh, yeah.
And there is a deep throat in all of this, who I would imagine quite fearful of his life right now, because at some point along the way, it was the plot was discovered, and they realized that the only way to defeat this overthrow and this coup d'etat that was actually being planned by the billionaires was that the anticipation of the number of Hispanics, African Americans, Asians, gay and lesbian, and women, voters.
No, that's right. And,
overwhelmingly. And so at
to that point, they're also underestimated. Remember, the problem is this, that Obama had a lot of he had more smart people working for him than clearly Romney did. Yes. One of the things they missed the mark on is they were still looking at 2008 as if, you know, white men are still going to outvote everyone else.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you look back now, you're right. They underestimated the Hispanic vote. They underestimated the black vote from the standpoint of notwithstanding the efforts made to oppress the vote, people stood online in Ohio, they stood online in Florida, and they voted. And they underestimated this. And not to mention, again, it goes back to we really do have a very smart president in the White House. This is a man who 4 years ago started planting the seeds as to what his geographic would be. And he went to these states, Ohio. He knew that that people that it was changing. He knew Hispanics were coming in. He knew more people of color were coming in. And those are the people he targeted. He still targeted the new voters, you know, people in college who had yet to vote. I mean, he just really hit a home run. It's a shame that we're not congratulating him.
But, you know, with Romney, you know, I really don't even think he cared about any Latino vote or women or so forth. And so, you know, he is still in a state of being stunned. You know, he is just stunned that he lost.
About him. If you noticed during the debate, I didn't see the first one, and unfortunately I didn't
And there's another thing. I really thought as I was watching this, as he's exchanging his story over and over and over from 1 minute, and then he'd go to another, a rally or something, and then he would change the story all over again. I really thought that the man was suffering from some sort of mental illness.
Well, he didn't even plan to withdraw if he had lost the contest. He was so confident.
That's why he's so stunned.
You know. So I mean, the thing is,
his concession speech was what, 5 minutes? I mean, clearly he didn't plan for it. I mean, you talk about the debates. I mean, you know, and I'm gonna be honest with you. I didn't think Obama did so poorly his first debate, but I can understand. You know, most people expect more out of him. What I was taken by Romney was just the disrespect. I mean, and then
why is your telephone beeping, Wilfredo?
No, not at all.
Something that's beeping here that we keep hearing.
There's some money around here.
Yeah, there's some money.
Guys, I wish. My phone is not beeping. I apologize.
If there's money around, listen, we are now
all that jewelry
sponsors.
She's wearing.
We're looking for advertisers. Yeah, money around.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think one other thing that's with this talk of secession, because you may recall Governor Perry had this he discussed this while he was running for office. He had thrown potential. And ultimately, as history unfolds, and I keep saying this, it's going to catch hold one of these days. These gentlemen and women and the parties and the billionaires, in my opinion, with the obstruction and their participation in what they try to do, fits the true definition of treason and sedition.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
absolutely
there's a point at which they need to be served at least a subpoena to come to Congress and explain themselves as to why they could publicly feel that they could get on the public airways and say from the day that Obama won the first election and publicly claim, as Mitch McConnell said,
right.
His number one job, as well as John Boehner, was to defeat the president. They did everything they could to block and throw up every hurdle you could potentially throw in, including the kitchen sink, which, in my opinion, is sedition and treason.
I'm in favor of free speech, but there is a limit to everything.
Well, exactly. There's a thing called the First Amendment. I was going to say, I think that's right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's just that it's so guttural the way some of these broadcasters, Rush Limbaugh, referring to the First Lady's derriere, as if that was the, forgive the pun, a butt of the joke every time he went on the air, to talk about, her body, her proudness, and sexuality. I mean, I just think that's highly disrespectful.
Oh, it is.
Even how they refer to the president throughout this process, think about it. I've never heard any president. Remember, we endured George Bush, the son, for 8 years. I never heard a president refer to as lazy or incompetent. Oh my God! I mean,
right, exactly.
Never heard that before, ever. I've never heard anyone refer to our president like that. I mean, it's really shameful.
Well, I'm all in favor of the First Amendment rights, and I grew up in Washington, D.C., so I've been a witness to a lot of the power changes and the grabs going on.
Mm.
Power is power, and this Rome, folks, is the most powerful city in the world.
That's right.
And ultimately, men and women do anything they want and can do.
But
the people have spoken, and the power
is with the minority, the majority of
that's
people
right.
who are not white at this particular
right,
moment.
Right.
Okay,
and that's the issue.
And they can't stand the fact that they are no longer, in power. That's the bottom line. And if they're going to do anything aside, maybe even starting some sort of little revolution or something, but they will be that way.
But as a historian, I can tell you that this is nothing new, the obstructionism.
That's right.
Reconstruction period was the same.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's like there's
and it was more violent.
That's right. And it's
but think about it, Trump. I mean, I don't know if that was in a call for resolution. I thought he was calling for a race riot. I mean, what was he saying?
Oh, it's called for an enema. That's what he needed. man was sick.
I mean, think about it. He was, we need to revote. That was a call for a race riot. I mean, gee whiz, I was young. I was a little kid. I didn't live in the 60s, but I can't imagine, older folks, people of color, listening to someone saying that in today's day. I mean, I just couldn't believe that Trump, because he lost, I guess he was backing Romney, would suggest that, we should, there should be a revolution. I mean, to me, that was a call for a race riot. To me, it was as simple as that. I mean, it's just really, I just couldn't, this election was really, really education from the standpoint that people's true colors, came out. I mean,
Listen, do we have to take a break for right now? I hope that we can get a break. Are we okay for a break about right now? Ayana? Okay, we're going for a break. Wolfredo, Wayne and Byron, stay with us. We'll be right back. King, that's Joe.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that music. You know, I want to tell you another thing. Now, Eric is calling in. Eric Payne is calling in. He is the producer of Political Roundtable. In case you don't know, this is Political Roundtable.
Oh.
You know, this is a segment that Eric produced and, you know, had, you know, yes. come up with, you know, the idea of, you know, a long time ago, you know, when every now and then we do politics anyway. Mm-hmm. And right now, what a better time than to, you know, do political
here.
Thing. Yeah. Wilfredo, you still there? Is Wilfredo still there? Okay.
Yes,
is Eric on yet? Okay. Okay. Eric is going to be calling on also. But this is really amazing. You know, I want to say another thing, going back to the actors and actresses, just for a minute, because of all this history going on. Everyone was talking about Diane Carroll being the first woman, you know, to have a talk show, or no, not a talk show, having a television show, and she had a substantial role on that show.
Julia.
First black woman, Julia, yeah. Right. She was not the first black woman. Gail Fisher.
Yeah,
and Mannix, and a good friend of mine.
Yeah, I remember that show.
Right.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
Gail Fisher and Gail's niece, and I have to put this out here right now. Gail Fisher's niece is living in Maplewood, New Jersey. If anyone knows, I forget her name, but I met this young lady at Wilfredo and Eric at one of Congressman Donald Payne's affairs. And I was looking at this woman. And I said, "My God!" I said, "You look so familiar." I couldn't get over it. I kept staring at her. I said, "You look like a friend of mine from years and years and years ago." She said, "Oh, really?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Her name was Gail Fisher, and this young girl, she was my aunt."
Wow.
And I had her in years. Gail Fisher, Mannix, beautiful.
Oh yeah.
From Rawway, New Jersey, from a place
really?
Called Potter's Crossing in Rawway, New Jersey.
I have to look that one up.
Don't you dare. It's going to be a long time ago. But really, Gail Fisher, I'll give her props. She was the first black woman who had a job, you know, representing other black women on. Carol. Everybody forgets or have forgotten about Gail.
Yeah.
Ophelia DeVore knows about Gail.
Is Gail Fisher still with us?
No, she died some time ago. As a matter of fact, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago.
So,
you know, and
I remember her well.
And she was in the hospital, and I tried to get my best to get in touch with her. And how I found out that she was even in the hospital in California was by reading The Inquirer. It was a newspaper that I never read before, but I decided to. This is the way things happen with me. It's draw like this. And who would have thought that, you know, Lena Horne and Kennedy would have said, well, you know, in 30 years you'll have a Negro, he said, a Negro president.
Yeah. Well, we hope he's not.
And
well, one
me,
thing we know
it?
He's not a Negro.
And
that much we do know he's not a Negro. So.
For me also to see my name on 136 here, and then she also talks a great deal about Whoopi Goldberg. Really interesting stuff. Fascinating. Mm. But anyway, so let's continue with this. Now, what else?
I was just saying during the break, I was talking to Byron about Chris Christie's role in all this. I was at Home Depot just before the storm.
I may vote
and,
for him.
you know, I tell you, I was just so taken back by the fact that he just heaped so much praise unexpectedly on the president. I mean, I expected Obama to be presidential. I figured this was going to be an opportunity to get the campaign off the front page during the storm. But the fact the way Christie came out and just heaped praise on him, like as if he was like the second coming of Christ, forgive me. Really, it just said a lot about Christie as an individual and the fact that, you know, this guy doesn't have allegiance to anyone because he was the one that was heaping praise on Romney early on to see that he moved from the position that he was in, which was a position of weakness against the other eight Republican candidates at the time.
But think about it. That was the first time in a long time that Christie realized, hey, by the way, I am the governor of New Jersey. I mean, remember, he's been on the national stage for well over a year. I think there's been, you know, criticism of him that he quite candidly forgot that he's from New Jersey because he's out there, you know, promoting, campaigning for Romney. So it was the first time in a long time that he touched the ground. Unfortunately, you know, Sandy, you know, made a lot of us touch the ground. But you're right. He came out strong and not weak on his praise for the president. But, you know, to that point, he's not stupid. The one thing about Christie, he's not a dumb guy. He's really bright. He's smart. He knows what he's doing. And he realizes, you know, notwithstanding the presidential race, I think, quite candidly, he knew that Romney was going to lose. I think it was easy for him to put praise on Obama.
Okay,
he's thinking ahead. He's thinking ahead. He's thinking about whether rerunning for governor, Craig Kennedy being a real strong candidate for president. I mean, to win as a Republican, as you all know, we know the Republican Party is in disarray. They're going to have to put someone there who's a moderate, or at least closer to the middle, and I think Christie can probably be a strong candidate for the Republicans.
I think, I'm going to vote for the person that we have on the phone right now, and I hope this is Eric Payne. Eric, are you there? Hello? Or do we have this caller on? Hello? You're on the air.
I'm here.
The next president of the United States, Eric Payne. Hi, Eric.
Yeah, how you doing?
Say hello to Wilfredo and Wayne and Byron and me and Ayanna.
Eric.
Hello, Eric.
Hey, how you doing?
Mr. Payne. How are you?
How are you? Listening to you guys' discussion about the historic night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That we had last Tuesday. I was out here in California working on a proposition, Proposition 32. We were working to defeat a proposition called Proposition 32 that was trying to basically take the teeth out of the union's ability to organize and donate to Democratic causes. And it was being backed by the Republicans. Even Karl Rove got involved and got money from the Koch brothers, who spent about $15 million to see this measure pass. They were trying to allow the corporations and businesses to still be able to donate as much money as they want, but they wanted to disallow the unions from using payroll deductions as a form of political giving. And as we all know, usually union members are middle-class people and usually vote Democratic. So that was their kind of ploy to try to take away the backing, the financial backing, and also the voice of the average working person out here. So fortunately, we were able to defeat that measure, even though they spent about $20 million.
Wow.
I think even more than
that. Is that $20 million on top of the $100 million he spent on commercials trying to defeat Obama? Or is it part of the $20 million
at least $20 million on that. So he's not doing too good in his record. So I heard some fact, I don't know if it's accurate, that in the majority of the races that he was involved in, pretty much all of them lost. So
now, the majority of the races that who was involved in? What was that?
Karl Rove.
Oh, him. Still.
Well, you know what?
I mean, they may have been one incumbent who won, but that only won. Like, I mean, we can literally one or two, but really, I mean, it was really a dismal night for Karl Rove. He was not the central. And hence his spin on what happened. I mean, he went for blaming Christie. Think about it. He blamed President Obama for suppressing the vote. That's why he won. I mean, think about it. That's just absurd.
It's laughable.
Well, was their tactic when they were in power. One of their established tactics was to accuse people of the very things that they were doing. I'm talking about the Republicans, Karl Rove. And that was their whole tactic, to accuse people of doing the very things that they themselves were doing. And
you know, one of the other things that happened during the election, which no one has yet to discuss yet, but it will come up when we have the discussions about immigration and the change of policy that is forthcoming, is that there was in Puerto Rico a non-binding vote. They overwhelmingly voted for statehood.
I'm not shocked. That's amazing to me. I am Puerto Rican, born in Puerto Rico. My family's Puerto Rican. I was taken aback by that, to be honest with you, because that's been a fight for years. And it's amazing that overwhelmingly they voted for that. We see what happens. I'm really curious to see what happens with that.
What is your opinion about statehood, Wilfredo?
You know, I Puerto Rico is so special to me. My whole family is there. It's a commonwealth. You know, I enjoy the fact that we get the benefits of and the protections of the United States, but I also enjoy the fact that we can kind of sit alone at our own island and just kind of be this special Caribbean place. I haven't really thought about it too much. I'm concerned, obviously, as to about taxes and things of that nature. I mean, obviously, I think part of the reason why people are considering statehood is so that we can vote, actually vote in Congress and what have you. So I can appreciate that. But I really enjoy the specialness, if you would, being a commonwealth, whatever that means. I mean, and so, you know, other than that, I really don't have much more to say to that. I'm really just surprised that, you know, that overwhelmingly, as you said, sir, that, you know, people are considering statehood. I mean, I was just really taken aback by that. But not for any particular reason. I'm just really taken aback because the fight has been always against that and, no, let's stay what we are, you know, that kind of thing. So I really was taken aback by that.
Well,
I haven't been following that at all.
One of the things that will impact, of course, obviously, is this discussion of immigration reform.
Yep.
And most consider that to be Mexican and Chicano.
Yeah.
So it impacts that there's this notion of where is the immigration reform and who is it going to impact? And like you just said, taxation without representation in Congress. Puerto Rico, Guam, and of course the District of Columbia.
You get the Asian community.
But to your point about immigration, where U.S. citizens? Like, you know, and actually it's interesting you say that because and maybe you guys know the answer. I did not do the research yet. I was born in Puerto Rico. I could run for president, right?
Now, Wayne was born in Trinidad. Byron?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Elizabeth, New Jersey.
I want to say Kenya.
Eric, where were you born? Eric, where were you born?
You forgot.
Weren't you there? I'm curious to get everybody else's opinion, if I can, about this, about how the coalition that elected the president, because if we talk about it, maybe you guys have already spoke about that, but the percentage of votes that he got from other demographics as opposed to the percentage of votes that Mr. Romney came, because Mr. Romney just made a statement earlier today that the president won the election because he gave gifts to minorities in terms of the health care bill. And also the college students. So even now he's starting with the sour grapes, even though he was conciliatory that night when he gave his speech. I guess he couldn't help but be conciliatory because he got beat so bad. But, you know, it's like McCain and Graham now. They're trying to go after Susan Rice and seeing what she how much she knew with the Bergen Dolly thing. And this is a guy who was involved and supported an administration that they lied. It was a fact that they lied. And for them to try and now come after the president and Susan and Ambassador Rice is ridiculous. But it's still they still do not want to get along and move the country, put the business of the country forward. They would rather go back and keep us in this stalemate because they're so upset, their heads are exploding that this guy got reelected and they can't take it. You know, and I'm just when you look at the demographics of how he won the election. People like John McCain, and I'm going to talk about the physical description of him, their influence and their power is kind of waning a little bit, at least from the public perspective and in terms of being able to vote. Because, you know, the coalition of Hispanics and blacks and young people that elected the president to his second term as opposed to, they say, something like 80% of the white vote went for Mitt Romney, and that was not enough. You know,
we did talk about that earlier. You're right. Yeah, that's correct.
Talk about the what's going on inside the Beltway and outside the Beltway. Isn't it amazing that both Virginia and Maryland voted overwhelmingly for Obama?
Yes.
So the Beltway is no longer.
But isn't it true that Mormons, but the majority of Mormons voted for Obama as opposed to Romney?
Well, you know, the main Utah paper backed Obama.
Think about it. Paul Ryan's backyard voted for. I mean, overwhelmingly for Obama.
Yes, right. So
I'll ask Eric if he's seen Clint Eastwood.
No, I haven't seen Clint. I didn't even see that last performance that he gave.
I used to like that. I grew up watching that man. You know, as a child, I used to idolize Clint Eastwood. I thought he could walk on water until that night. I was so much in pain, really, because it just destroyed my image of him. You know,
I kept losing it.
Believe Hollywood. Wayne, you can't believe Hollywood.
Yeah, that's true.
They had us thinking John Wayne was a hero too, and you know what?
Exactly.
You know what Chuck D and Flavor Flav say about John Wayne and Elvis. So, you know.
Fight for power. Fight for power. That's right.
Well, the battle in Congress is going to be very interesting
yeah.
over this upcoming
session.
I worry
session. About that, too, especially
yeah.
this financial cliff.
Yeah.
Well, I, you know, the cliff is one thing, but the ultimately the demographics and the change of the Republican Party is going to be imploding even more
mm-hmm.
because they will find out that those Tea Party members that really went with the pledge.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
There's going to be more Christies who are going to realize, I don't need to pledge any longer.
Yeah,
well, I
like
need
the
federal money.
Exactly, exactly. I want to get elected. You're right.
Good point. Good
you know,
point.
Jindal, the only minority I know in the Republican Party,
yeah.
you know, he said that this is the stupid party. I mean, it was. He finally admitted that? You know, he said that you know, there'll probably be more statements being made until they get
more
the
right stupid
together.
Party, right?
Yeah, you know. I'm just saying, you know, finally it's going home.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I remember 12 years ago covering the Bush convention in 2000, and I forgot where we were, but I know that they were really making an effort to show diversification. And they rolled Paul Powell in and a few other people and Condoleezza Rice, you know, oh, we got minority in our party and all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thing is that you could tell that it was like an orchestration. There was nothing genuine. But when you just
that
with what you see in the DNC, even as late as what occurred in Charlotte, you know, there's just no comparison.
Right.
You know, that's a
yeah.
that's
well,
that's
like you said, it's genuine. It's not a show. It's genuine. It's real. You know, people of color involved in the Democratic Party. I mean, it's just interesting. I'm really curious to see how the Republican Party revamps itself, and it has to. The fact that you have you know people like Limbaugh,
first of all,
Kane,
they have to
you know, making the
Wilfredo, first of all, they have to recover, you know.
But the only way they're going to recover is by acknowledging that they have to do something different. And to your point, it got to be a genuine come in and join our party and here's why, as opposed to, you know, I think like Limbaugh said, but we have Clarence Thomas and we have Colin Powell. I mean, it was just, I mean, it's almost like saying my best friend is black. I mean, it's just really, it was really absurd and it was sad and it was sad.
And all due respect to you, Wilfredo, I have to say that I was a little concerned about the Latino vote at one point because there has been some preponderance of outspokenness by some conservative Latinos saying that they weren't happy with Obama.
Yeah,
you know?
But here's the point: they don't live in New York City. They don't live where I came from.
No. These are some who are stuck in the Midwest somewhere. Or
And I'm.
You know,
I want to be careful about that.
You know,
you're also going to have you're going to have the Marco Rubio types too, who got a fat manufactured.
Dick Cunningham as the possible next Republican candidate.
He manufactured his background. At first, he said his parents came over as refugees from Fidel, and then come to find out they were here years before Fidel. So,
oh my God,
they were part of the privileged Cuban, because we know that there's the privileged Cubans who normally look like Marco Rubio who can quote pass.
Exactly.
And then there's the ones that can't pass, and that they don't receive they receive the same treatment that many of us who can't pass here in the United States have received over the years. So, you know,
those
individuals.
But think about it. Romney missed the mark. I mean, when you talk about immigration, you know, you have a president who says, you know, if you were born, I mean, if you're the children of immigrants, but you were born in the United States, and you are entitled to an education, and you are exempt from deportation. That's a big deal versus Romney, who says, I'm going to oppose educational benefits for immigrants, notwithstanding the fact that they may have been born here. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, either we are a country of immigrants or we aren't. And you can't have it both ways. And you had a small minority of white, older men who just refused to acknowledge that, you know, that the United States is actually that. And it represents exactly what the founders thought it would represent. So it's just interesting how, you know, we Republicans have to stick to the constitutional merits of, you know, I mean, really, it's really laughable. It's laughable. I mean, there was no way that, I don't care what you guys say, there was no way that a Hispanic person, knowing that they're mother or their brother, whomever can be deported, was going to vote for Romney.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they don't. That's just stupid to me.
First vote that comes up in the Congress on the so-called budget, that the precipice that everybody is discussing and standing on, it's going to be very interesting, because if they allow the engagement of the recommended cuts that automatically come in, if they don't pass the budget, will impact on some serious deficit spending and some cuts to the defense budgets, which impacts all of those southern states that voted for Romney.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because we're talking about we're talking about Lockheed Marietta. We're talking about defense contract. That's what has kept the Republicans in hold on the southern states all this time. And it's going to change drastically.
And along with
that,
let me ask this question. Along with that, what is the role of government? Let's go to the Petraeus situation now.
Thank
what,
God that didn't happen before.
I know. You know, this is what I was telling, you know, my kids and whatnot. But, you know, what is the role of government in a situation like this? You know, have you ever thought about that? What is the role of government? The president was not told immediately about this.
But can I just say my piece, and I promise I'm going to be quiet on this, because my piece is this, simply, real simple. If it didn't impact national security, I don't want to hear about his personal nonsense. And quite candidly,
that's just the point.
Let his wife deal with that. I mean, and I say that respectfully. I mean, really, if it had no impact on national security, think about it. But for the fact that this woman, Kelly, knew some FBI person, this never would have come to the forefront. I mean, it would have been something we hadn't heard. And unless someone can show me, and I know they're digging, because they're trying to make it look like, you know, our attorney general did not tell Obama for obvious reasons. But unless they can show to me that there was a national breach, I don't want to hear about it.
But you don't know. That's the crux of this to me.
Well,
you know, because here he is, the head of the CIA or the FBI or whatever, whoever, with that kind of information, he's going to be fooling around. I don't care how many people he fools with. But the point is the information that he had can be, you know, disastrous to our country.
Exactly. But here's the other side of the coin that must be revealed as well. We're talking about Panetta, who's supposed to know what's going on inside CIA.
CIA
headquarters is one of the most secretive places other than the National Security Agency in Fort Meade. And the ultimate thing is that the paramour, the so-called relationship, West Point cadet.
Right.
We're talking about an inside. And I agree with you. If it has nothing to do with national security, I don't care. I mean, you got caught having an affair.
But the national security issue is the
and
point.
And that is the point.
But it's the point of how they
You know, we have the
justifying it.
Basically, the CIA is working under the direction of the president. You know, so, I mean, you can't get any higher than that. But, you know, I have to agree with everyone here that I feel that, you know, as long as it didn't breach the security. I mean, Kay, you and I have kept our secret for you. We haven't, you know, imploded or exploded. Never.
Oh, my God. wait, excuse me.
Yes,
my
I'm sorry.
Son
oh,
is
that's why you're so good here. I'm
comfortable with that. Yeah. All right, I got a secret for Wayne, too.
Hey, Eric, would you like to... Eric, my child, would you like to address this?
Okay. What was Eric called?
I got a secret for Gilbert, but too. I think the part of the thing what they're saying is that, well, you know, if it didn't affect national security, but I think people bring up the idea that might it had affected national security, because would he have been beyond reproach in terms of someone being able to blackmail him and things like that. So I think that's part of it. I kind of tend to agree. You know, everybody's adults and everybody knows these things have a tendency to happen. But, you know, also too, it's like what comes to mind is someone like Richard Nixon. It's just us in this room. If everybody agrees to erase this tape, who's going to know about it?
Right.
And then we deal with the integrity issue. It's like when you get to that point where you have that power, what do you do?
Right.
Because
correct me if I'm wrong.
Let me finish making this point, because we could choose we could choose, you know, knowledge is power. So if we're the five of us, or say the six of us in the room, and we're the only ones who know about this particular situation, and it goes against ethics, and it's not quite, you know, it's not quite honest, but if the six of us keep this secret, you know, then who's going to be the wiser, and what's going to be the harm? That's a great amount of temptation to do. Should I cross that line if nobody finds out?
Mm-hmm.
And so that question has always remained there. I mean, they all know Petraeus. He's a guy who put his life on the line for this country. Probably more than, you know, I was just having a discussion about somebody with somebody about John McCain, who's a little questionable when he was, you know, when he was in the Hanoi Hilton. Certain other POWs, McCain broke. Some other guys didn't break.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's very
true. So that's why Scowcroft and some of those guys, you know, they really didn't have too much respect for him, you know, but he, you know, he kind of broke at that point.
Yeah.
Those guys didn't break. So, you know, how can he stand up there in judgment of other people when, you know, we go back to your history, you didn't always do the right thing, or you, admittedly, I mean, who's to say who would break and who wouldn't break in that situation?
Yeah.
All we know is that certain individuals didn't, certain did, but it still is about, you know, honor. Petraeus took himself out of the mix.
But let me just ask you this question, and correct me if I'm wrong. CIA had this number. He was in the military. He was a superstar in the military. Did some wonderful things in the military. Then, in his private life, he became head of the CIA, right? Because the CIA is not military. It's a private. It's not military. Is that correct? And if that's
right.
the case, then I go back
really.
To my point that. Well, I mean, it's not. He wasn't a military guy head of the CIA. He was a private citizen, a retired military person, head of the CIA, right? So he was a private citizen, again, to me. And I think it's all legitimate points, and maybe they'll find something, but absent a showing that it had some impact on national security, then really, truly, unfortunately, it's a private matter between husband and wife, and we should respect that.
This is called lawyer speak.
Right.
That's true.
Then the other thing is that it does speak to the integrity of our leadership. And because one of the things that the Republicans tried their best during this last campaign was to throw everything at Obama, trying to figure out where was the chink in his armor.
Exactly. Okay? They tried like a son of a gun.
Yes, they did.
And
ultimately, he withstood every last one. And he... His brilliance is he checkmated the Republicans.
That's
on
right.
Every...
Yeah, really. Oh, he sure did.
Beat him badly.
Beat him bad.
Listen,
right.
guys, we have 5 minutes until the show's end. And I think Ayanna was saying something about show and tell in there, you know, or kiss and tell. That had something to do with this discussion. But listen, you know, we're going to have to do this again.
Yeah.
And we still have several minutes. And, you know, Eric, glad to have you on.
Thank you. I'm going to get off and let you guys continue it. I got to go back to work. I'm supposed to be working, but.
Okay. Are you going to be covering any of those sharp button issues again or what?
Not soon. I'll let you know, though.
Okay. All right. Talk to you later.
Yeah,
11. Okay.
Right.
See you later.
You.
Okay. Also,
talk to you later, Eric.
Okay,
Eric.
And Eric is the producer, you know, and came up with the idea for Political Roundtable. And this I love because of this kind of discussion. I learn so much, you know, and I get to argue. You know, I always think, you know, well, you know Wayne from being doing talk shows, and you know Byron from being talk shows. And Wilfredo, you know from you and I just having these long discussions, and Ayanna knows and Ty knows, we all think we have such profound things to say.
And we do.
I'm just happy that all the reading that I do, waking up early and reading it, I finally get to just talk to people who can talk back to me. I love it.
Yeah,
yeah,
well, you're happy. Ayanna says, I do. I'm just smart like that. She's such a wise guy. Yes, you are me. Now, listen, we'll have to do this again because this is very exciting, and I don't think we're having enough time. Byron, you're going to have to. Ayanna?
Yeah.
Oh, she'll. Ayanna, would you want to come in next time?
Yeah.
She says yes, please, and I'm down to do that anyway, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, but and Byron, you know, with your historical show, you know, with all the history, you know, I love it.
Thank you, because I'm a researcher
in African American history,
yes.
You know,
I'm
major,
I'm
my
learning.
Minor and major.
I keep learning every
yeah,
day.
Yeah, and
new.
The research
Absolutely.
Is so fantastic,
yeah.
you know. And Wilfredo, you know, you as the attorney in the bunch, keeping everybody straight and legally right.
I just love it. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Well,
really
here. Hopefully we'll be seeing you running for office one of these days. I vote for you for president, Wilfredo.
I would love to. We'll see what happens. I actually love this, and thanks for having me. Can't wait to do this again. I love you guys. Thank you for being
on the
show.
Especially since you're the father for my grandchildren.
That helps.
Talk to you later. And Wayne Gilman, former news director, how can I say, extraordinaire.
Really?
From WLIV, BLI.
Snotty-nosed kids.
Tough.
South Bronx.
Tough.
Who don't care,
No.
No, I'm grateful to be. And I enjoy this. This is like second nature for me.
I know, because
I'm
you've been doing this
kids.
A long
time. I know. I mean,
you mean teaching?
Yeah, what I'm saying is it's coming in here and talking, having an adult conversation.
Yeah.
Because usually it's just one way.
What kind of conversation do you have? I'm going to beat you.
That's basically what goes on.
Is that middle school?
Well, it's middle school and it's early, I guess it's elementary school. School,
yeah,
you know, it's not high school yet, and they're learning. I'm really concerned about this generation coming up, you know, because a lot of it is they're inheriting and absorbing the characteristics of what our generation has passed on,
right.
Especially the ones that did not do as well,
mm-hmm.
who are not as successful,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what I'm concerned about.
And then
the kind
of programming that they're watching,
that doesn't help. Yeah, you know.
One thing that we know that all the kids are not, you know, buying into this, you know. I mean, I've taught school,
exactly.
And there's nothing like, you know, the kind of thrill that you get when you're getting to some of the kids.
Yeah.
And I remember when I came up with that, you know, creating that program, I forgot the name of it. But anyway, we're teaching teachers how to teach their students, how to teach them to do television and radio production.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually, you know, increased their reading skills.
Yeah.
So I have a whole curriculum out of
it. These kids have no interest in that, though.
No, really?
It saddens me because you could put them in front of a computer terminal and watch some sort of video game where they're, you know, fighting and beating up on each other.
And then
you know, the PlayStation concept.
You're really competing
we
there.
We need to come back to a scope of PlayStation being one of survival, not one of confrontation,
not one
of war, not one of battle.
Interactive learning.
That's right. And then
that's
showing them that being smart is the new cool.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing.
And I tend to believe that they're absorbing so much and just want to be given a chance to show how smart they are.
Yeah.
I found that out with teaching the junior high school child. And when you start teaching junior high school kids, you know, they're at that age of they want to be adults, they're not adults, and so forth and so on, you know, going through puberty and whatever else they're going through. They are the biggest pains in the behind ever.
Mm.
But the point is, you know, you can get to them as long as you involve them in the learning. Let it be an interactive, you know, situation. You know, but I even hated. I am so anti-textbooks, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Well, we're visual.
Yeah, absolutely. We're visual. We're hands-on. Yeah. You know, and if you get a child will be motivated by doing something that he or she likes to do.
Yeah.
And then they'll run with it as long as they're in love with it. And it's up to us to find out. It's time to go. Diana's telling us it's time to go. Wilfredo?
He's gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Wilfredo Benitez. Yeah.
took off.
Well, thanks, you guys. Thanks, Wayne.
I mean, I joke around a great deal with that.
You love me.
I love you.
All right.
And I am so sorry to hear about this.
Yeah.
I really am.
Yeah.
And,
he's here.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. He talks to me.
Right. I can imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. We will see you again.
Certainly,
we'll do this again and again. And Byron,
as long as you can pay me the way you have been, I'll be here.
Oh, really? Byron, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Everybody listen to Byron's song. Sweet. Kay Thompson here, KM Gush Show. Bye.